you know, I think that'll probably, our focus will shrink just a little bit, but we need to make sure we stay flexible in case things come back and we are able to host people from outside, you know, at greater distances, and we'll get those people back in.
Hey everybody, great news. The Destination Marketing Podcast is going on the road over the next couple of months. We're actually starting with Tennessee. We're going to be in Tennessee the week of September 8th. I say September 8th because the 7th is Labor Day, so we'll be there right after Labor Day. We're going to be in Tennessee then, and then a little bit later, we're going to be in Mississippi, and we're also going to hit North Carolina that month. And if you, in your destination or your state, would like to be featured on the Destination Marketing Podcast on the road and do an in-person episode, whether it's in one of your attractions, eateries, whatever, we'd love to come do a live episode there. So we're tired of being quarantined. We're getting out of the office, and we're excited to come to your destination and feature your destination on the Destination Marketing Podcast. Let us know if you want to be a part of it. Email me at adam@relicagency.com, and we'll schedule a time to get the Destination Marketing Podcast in your neck of the woods. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Destination Marketing Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Stoker. I'm excited to be with you today. A couple of reminders for everybody before we dive into the show. One, if you haven't joined the Destination Marketers LinkedIn group, you might be missing some of the tangible assets that we talk about on the show, and so make sure you go and request to be added to that group. Also, we have a Slack channel called Destination Marketers, and if you haven't joined that, you also may be missing some of the extra content from the show. So make sure you go request access to both of those. We'll let you in and get you set up there, and you can take full advantage of the show. But today we've got another great show for you. We have Nathan Rafferty, and he is from Ski, Utah. Nathan, welcome to the show.
Hey, Adam. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. We're excited to have you on. You know, we've had to be in these board meetings and stuff in person enough at the Utah Tourism Industry Association, and it'll be good to have you on and chat on the podcast.
Totally. Yeah, I look forward to it.
Great. So we have a couple of icebreaker questions that we like to ask everybody just to kind of get the juices flowing on every show. So we'll start with you on what is your dream destination, Nathan? If you could go anywhere in the world, where would it be?
And do you ask these same questions of everybody, or are the icebreakers different?
No, I ask these same questions of everybody. So it's kind of fun to hear the variety of answers that we get.
Yeah, totally. I guess my dream destination is where I should have been right now, which is Russia and Kazakhstan. So I was planning to be there, but as you know, a lot of travel went up in smoke, and maybe I'll get there next summer.
Oh, no. So you had your dream vacation planned and it got canceled, huh?
Well, you know, I'm lucky enough to travel a bunch. So, yeah, I was really looking forward to it. But, you know, when this all dies down, I'll get back out there and, you know, be even more excited about it.
Nice. So what were the activities going to be in Russia and Kazakhstan?
I was going to be riding my motorcycle, doing a race that started in Moscow and actually finished in Western China. So the big chunks were in several days in Russia, and then maybe like a week in Kazakhstan, and then a couple days in China. So I was really looking forward to that. It seems part of the world I haven't seen a ton of.
Okay. All right. So what sort of motorcycle are we riding?
It's kind of a hybrid. It's a really big dirt bike. Is the best way to explain it, but it's a cool way to see the, you know, I mean, we're definitely off the beaten path and you don't see a lot of other, well, traffic or people, but it's a really cool way to see the terrain and just explore new countries.
Now, were you going with the intent to win, or were you going with the intent to just have a great time and say you've done it?
I was going with the intent to survive. So, you know, to finish some of these races is a win in itself. And, you know, I'm not on that level, but I have fun doing it.
Awesome. Okay. Good stuff. Well, how about let's talk places you've been. What's your favorite place you've ever visited?
Oh, you know, I really like Switzerland. I've been there a handful of times, and I just think every time I go, I just think it's so stunning. I feel like I'm stepping into the set of a movie. It's just such a beautiful spot, and the mountains and the brand of Switzerland is so on point. It's just everywhere you look, it feels like it's set up just for you. And I never get tired of going back there.
So Switzerland's been a popular answer on this show, and I'm starting to see why. I mean, it sounds like a pretty amazing experience.
Yeah, totally. You know, I've got a long list of places that it's really tough to kind of come up with a favorite, but, that's right there towards the top of my list.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, Nathan, you know, you are the CEO of Ski Utah, and I'd love to have you give us a little bit about your background and how you ended up in the role you're in today.
Sure. So I started at Ski Utah in 1994, the summer I graduated from college, and I was an intern at Ski Utah. So I was an unpaid intern that summer, have risen kind of through the ranks. I was the office manager / receptionist, was the PR guy for about 7 years, and I've been the president for, I can't remember, I think 14 years or so. And I bounced back and forth between Park City ski area a little bit for little stints there, but have spent the vast majority of my career at Ski Utah. And I'm hoping I don't get fired anytime soon because I really don't know how to do anything else.
Well, good stuff. You know, I think we could do an entire episode about the value of taking that internship, whether it's a low paid or unpaid internship. That me taking an internship like that changed the course of my career. Sounds like it did for you as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, didn't change the course. It made the course for my career.
Right, right. Well, good stuff. Okay, let's hear a little bit about Ski Utah as an organization and kind of how it fits into the Utah tourism industry.
Right. So so Ski Utah has been around since 1975, and I mean, probably like a lot of associations, it was a product. It was born out of necessity. Ski areas were having some issues on a legislative level, and so they banded together to work on some of these legislative issues, and it turned out that they worked well enough together. And back in the 70s, you know, none of the skiers in Utah had this kind of marketing budgets that they needed to reach outside of the state. So a couple years later, in 1978, they started marketing together, and Ski Utah was born. So really just pooling funds to market our greatest snow on earth outside of the state of Utah. And it's been around ever since. So we're now, you know, we're not a huge company. We've got $3.2 million budget and about 250 members. Really, the core amount of our funding comes from the 15 alpine ski areas in the state. And we've got a 21-member board of directors, largely made up of the ski areas. But we represent, beyond just the ski areas, anybody who might make their living from Utah's ski industry. So retail, rental, transportation, lodging, and skiing in the state of Utah is about, 2 years ago, it was just about under $1.7 billion industry. So big business in the state of Utah and growing for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And Ski Utah as an organization has done a great job of pushing the brand, you know, the greatest snow on earth. Can you tell us anything that you're aware of how that phrase came about or how that tagline came about and how you use it today?
Yeah, so it's actually owned by the state of Utah, and they license it to us, and we've used it forever and ever. It's been on our license plates. And as you know, if it's on your license plate, then it must be true, right? There's a scientific fact. And there's a great longer story about how that phrase came up, but there's a gentleman named Tom Korologos. His brother is Mike Korologos. I don't know if you know Mike. He's been a long time PR guy in the state of Utah. And his brother,
I haven't met him yet.
He's awesome. But his brother Tom, who's now, I believe, a lobbyist back in D.C., was writing for the Salt Lake Tribune at the time, and he was writing a kind of a roundup story about skiing in the West and describing Utah. And it just so happened he looked out his window in downtown Salt Lake City, and the circus was in town. So there were elephants walking down Main Street. They were doing the big parade, and everybody knows Barnum and Bailey's tagline is the greatest show on earth, and somehow the greatest snow on earth worked its way into that story, and it stuck. And you know, I've talked to a handful of kind of ski industry legends, marketing folks, and one of them told me that they thought it was the best tagline in the history of North American skiing. I mean, it really just resonates and has stuck around for so long, and it's that ubiquitous greatest snow on earth. And it's pretty rare that you talk to somebody from out of state and you ask them why they like skiing in Utah, and they're always talking about the snow. And yeah, we have great snow. Yeah, we get a lot of snow, but it also helps that our license plates say the greatest snow on earth on them as well.
Well, and that's kind of what I get a kick out of so much with the brand that we've built here as the greatest snow on earth, because, you know, I'll talk to people from out of town, and they'll constantly say it lives up to the promise. You know, so whether it is the greatest snow on earth or it's just great snow, the promise or the authenticity that comes along with it is real, that people do have the type of experience that matches that promise. And it wouldn't hold up if it didn't at least, if it wasn't at least somewhat true.
Yeah, Adam, I totally agree with you. There's, in fact, there's a gentleman named Jim Steinberg, who is the director of meteorology, atmospheric sciences at the University of Utah, actually wrote a book called The Secrets of the Greatest Snow on Earth. And, you know, if I say, hey, if you don't believe me that because it's on the license plate, it's true, when they write a book about it and tell you why the greatest snow on earth really is the greatest, and without getting too into the weeds about it, they talk about, you know, there are places that get more snow than we do. Mount Baker up in Washington typically gets more snow than we do. Colorado, there are places that get drier snow. Colorado, by a fraction, gets a little drier snow. But what makes Utah's snow so special, you know, boiling it down to this little conversation here, is that we get a very consistent, large amount of snow that's also very dry. It's not the driest and it's not the most, but it's really the most consistent. And it also comes in a way that is, we call it, as a skier, you call it right side up. So it often comes in warm, which means it's a little denser on the bottom of a storm cycle, and then it gets lighter as the storm cycle rolls through. So say you got a foot of fresh snow, the densest snow is on the bottom, the lightest snow is on the top. It's just this kind of, you know, perfect storm of different variables that make this snow so great here and really easy and fun to ski on.
Awesome. And were you a big skier before you got into your internship at Ski Utah?
I was. I mean, it was the reason I got into it, right? Because I wanted to figure out a way to ski for free. So I figured if I work in the industry, I can maybe I can pull that off. And I'm still pulling it off to this
yeah,
day.
I was going to say, it sounds like you've probably achieved that goal today, right?
I'm the ultimate ski bum. That's kind of how I think of it.
Awesome. Well, I know you're very involved in the Utah tourism industry, and you sit on that board with me. Tell me a little bit about your involvement in the board and how that's helped Ski Utah within the industry.
Right. Well, you know, we're really lucky in this state, and even at Ski Utah, you know, we're known, and when we talk to our other associations, ski associations, there's a Ski New Hampshire and a Colorado Ski Country USA and a California Ski Areas Association. They're all pretty envious about how we all work together. And I'd say that's not true just in the ski industry in Utah, but in tourism in Utah. So as you know, Adam, you know, we have all these entities that work together in UTIA, and it might seem like an eclectic bunch when you've got the ski guys and you've got the river rafting guys and you've got St. George and this state, which is so cool because it's so varied. But everybody works really, really well together. And there are big, you know, that it really pays off in spades when we're up at the legislature, we're working on some of these big tourism issues, we're trying to generate funding to promote our state. And when we can all march lockstep, when, you know, the powers that be see us, you know, see it. So the ski guys aren't fighting with the national parks, who aren't fighting with whoever else, you know, when we're all marching together, it makes a real impact.
Well, Ski Utah has to embody that collaboration because, in a sense, you've got all these competitors that are pooling their money together and believe that kind of all the boats will rise in the tide. That can't be an easy job to keep them all on the same page.
You know, it's really true. And, you know, it's really my kind of my number one task. That being said, I haven't had a ton of trouble with it. I do know that other states, it's really not the same. And people tell me that all the time. And now and again, we'll have a new ski area general manager and they'll come here from out of state. And I'll always kind of be a little nervous about how that person is going to fit in and whether they're going to be a team player. And to a person, they're always blown away at the camaraderie and the way all these ski areas really work together because, yeah, they're competitors to a degree, but they're all so very different. You know, I mean, a snowbird couldn't be any more different than a Deer Valley. And these guys, you know, really work well together, and especially on common legislative issues, funding, you know, alcohol issues, you know, the stuff that affects us all. So we're really lucky like that.
That's got to be a big part of why Ski Utah has been able to be so effective over the years, is that spirit of collaboration and the ability to kind of keep everybody together.
Yeah, absolutely. I wholeheartedly agree. You know, we've got 15 ski areas in the state and we've got 15 ski areas that are members of Ski Utah. I do worry that, you know, that could all go away in a moment's notice. I don't get any sense that it's going to, but, you know, we're long past the days where our marketing budget was bigger than any of the ski areas. And that used to be the case. But, you know, you look at Park City that's got, you know, it's owned by Vail Resorts, and Deer Valley, it's now owned by Alterra. And these are big, big companies that don't need necessarily our, you know, our marketing dollars. And they've got very sophisticated marketing machines behind them. But there are other ways that Ski Utah can help them out. You know, we've shown that we've been, you know, a good value for what they give us, and hopefully we're helpful.
Awesome. Well, we're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about how COVID has affected Ski Utah and a little bit about the season getting cut short and everything that comes along with that. So we'll take a little break and we'll be right back. Okay, guys, since we started the Destination Marketing Podcast a little over a year ago, I've had several destinations reach out and say, hey, could you help me start a podcast? And at first we were like, well, no, that's not really what we do. But after enough requests, we said, you know what, let's explore this. And we've created a turnkey program for destinations where we will produce, we will host, we will edit, and we will publish your podcast for your destination on a weekly, bi-weekly, or monthly basis. And all you have to do is show up and answer some questions. We're really excited about this program. We've got a few destinations that have been doing really, really well with their podcasts. And if you've ever thought about creating a podcast for your destination, but you don't have all the equipment or you don't have the expertise or any of that type of stuff, let us take that off your hands. Let Relic handle your podcast creation and production, and all you have to do is show up and answer questions about all the amazing things there are to do within your destination. So let me know if you're interested. Email me at adam@relicagency.com and we'll get you set up on this podcast program. So Nathan, as we mentioned, the ski season was cut short because of COVID-19, and it's been such a painful thing for so many different businesses, but especially for the tourism industry. Tell me a little bit about kind of what that timeline was for you of realizing COVID was going to be a huge deal, and then kind of what happened from there.
Well, it was crazy. Honestly, I've never seen anything like it, and I feel like a young guy. I am just 49 years old, but, you know, I've spent my entire career in the ski industry here, and I've certainly never seen anything like this. Just the week before, you know, we saw this, you know, this, COVID kind of cloud stirring, but for some reason it just never registered to me that it was, could actually shut down the ski industry in the state. And it certainly did. So on March 14th, you know, and I've heard some of these ski areas recall this story a couple times, but our entire industry shut down literally overnight. And the ski areas in Park City both had a meeting at around noon with county health officials. And that was at noon. And they said, hey, just want to make sure you guys are aware of what's happening. You know, talked about cleaning procedures and what was happening at the resorts. And no less than 5 hours later, they called another meeting and said, we're done. We're shutting everything down. And between that time, the Colorado governor had shut down all the ski areas in the state of Colorado. Their resorts pulled the plug on all their resorts across North America. Deer Valley closed soon after that. And then it was just kind of a domino effect at our resorts here in the state. And what was interesting was that, you know, I mean, we closed that Saturday, March 14th was one of, if not the busiest check-in day of the entire year. So we had, I mean, I'm up in Park City. The town is absolutely jammed with spring breakers, families that have just landed for a week or more, a ski vacation, and they get the rug pulled out from under them. It was a very difficult decision, but at the end of the day, you know, with hindsight, you know, absolutely the right decision to make. And when these big ski areas started to close, it really put a lot of pressure on the small ski areas, because you can imagine if you're in Park City and there are 30,000 people here wanting to ski the next day, they're getting on their phones and they're Googling how long it takes to drive to Snow Basin. And Snow Basin is thinking, we can't handle 30,000 skiers. What if all these people show up at our mountain? And within, you know, a couple of the smaller ski areas held on for a day or two more, but everybody was totally done, and the entire industry was shuttered by the middle of that following week. And we estimate that we lost $232 million in spending that would have happened over those next several weeks. Because they really were some of the busiest weeks of our entire year.
Yeah, I've got to imagine that emotional swing from we are having at 10 a.m. on the 14th, we are having the best ski day of the year, to 5 p.m. when Park City decided, hey, we're shutting this down. And nobody's arguing that it was the right decision, because it was, but the emotional swing that took place, that had to be such an awful day for each of those ski resorts to kind of go through that swing of emotions.
Well, I think it just left everybody in shock. You know, they left that meeting at noon, and if you had asked the general managers of those two ski areas whether they were going to be shut 5 hours later, they'd say, what are you talking about? That's not what our meeting was about. And, you know, they turned off the lifts, and, you know, there's a lot that goes into breaking a ski area down at the end of the ski season. It was just done. They just flipped the switch and didn't turn those lifts on again. Well, I think they did several weeks later, just to go kind of clean up the mountain and get all the stuff off that they had to. But I mean, it was done. And it was just shocking to me how fast it happened. And I know the ski areas were disappointed that it had to happen at all, but you know, they weren't even able to tell their employees before they were able to shut down. So, you know, there was, the employees were like, we were working tomorrow. Is the ski area open? I mean, what's going on? So, it was just, the speed at which it closed was just, mind boggling.
Wow. Wow. Okay. So it closes, and then Ski Utah, obviously, as an organization, had a lot of work to do at that point, because I know that you were being looked to for leadership. What steps did you guys take as an organization once you realized that everything was shutting down?
Well, it kind of was just such a crazy time. So I have to give huge kudos to our sister organization, the National Ski Areas Association, and they really had taken the lead. It took several weeks to shake out, you know, what was happening in terms of loans and PPP financing, and really, you know, all these government aid assistance programs. And so they were able to sift through kind of those and sort through and help us understand how ski areas might take advantage of those. So we spent a lot of time working with our ski areas, helping them with some of those issues. And we continue to this day are working and dealing with the fallout of, you know, now J1 and H2B employees and blah, blah, blah. You know, it just goes kind of on and on. So, you know, the upside, if there was one for us, was we were close to the end of the ski season. I mean, yes, it was right there in the meat of those last few weeks. But I mean, had this happened in November or December, you know, we would have lost the entire ski season. And at least this gives us enough time looking forward to next year to kind of sort out a plan for what this next ski season will look like. And that being said, you know, you and I both know, Adam, that it's hard to plan past about 48 hours out because you just don't know what's going to happen. So that's the hardest part about it, is just planning for such an uncertain future.
Yeah. And that's really kind of where I was wanting to go with my next question, because, you know, your season was cut short, and that does give you a little more time to prepare for next season than you normally do. But that preparation is so much more intense now than it ever was before, because you've got, I mean, if the ski resorts are able to open, and that's one of my questions for you, is that an if or a when? But if they do, the normal for those resorts is going to be completely different. So I guess my first question is, will we have a season as far as you understand today? And if we do, what does that new normal look like?
Well, those are great questions. And I believe the answer is yes, absolutely. You know, and I've been telling people, they ask me, are we going to ski next year? And I'd say only if it snows. But if if it snows, we'll ski. What it's going to look like, we really don't know. I was on a call as early as just this morning, and the ski areas are trying to piece together what it looks like. You know, golf courses are open, movie theaters are open, theme parks are open, ski areas are going to be able to open. The thing I think they're wrestling with most, and ironically, the skiing part is the easiest. You know, you're kind of naturally distanced, standing in lift lines. There might be some tweaking there. Right. Everybody's got goggles, and a lot of times even have kind of buffs or masks on already. So that's the easy part. The tougher part is the lunch and food service, the retail, the rental, you know, all that stuff. So, but I think these are things that we can work through. And the skiers, I know, are looking really hard at ways to mitigate how many people come to the ski area at one time. And as you know, skiing is kind of a sport for enthusiasts. And when it snows 2 feet, like it often does here in Utah, everybody wants to be there at once. So my sense is that they're going to have plans in place for some kind of reservations or some way to limit the amount of skiing so that whatever they determine their safe cap can be on the mountain, they'll have a way to be able to do that. And it's really going to vary a lot between ski areas, I think. You know, some of the big destination resorts that have more people from out of town, who have more food service and more need to be inside sometimes than, say, a smaller ski area where locals are just going to come up and they only ski from 9 to 11:30 anyway, or maybe they bring their own lunch and they sit in their car. You know, that's a lot easier to deal with than some of the larger skiers. But the skiers are also made up of really optimistic, really creative minds. And I think they'll absolutely find a way to make it work.
Great. Well, I'm glad to hear the optimism there for the season. And I think you're right. I think, you know, as long as we can have the social distancing and, you know, some of the process changes go into effect, there's no reason that a golf course or a movie theater should be open, but a ski resort shouldn't. And so I think that totally makes sense. My question for you then is, as an organization, Ski Utah every year has an advertising campaign or multiple advertising campaigns, depending on what you're promoting. How has who you're targeting changed based on this situation? And then how does your messaging intend to change this upcoming year?
Sure. Well, you know, luckily today, you can change your messaging on a dime, you know, it because it's mostly digital. You know, you don't send your ad in August like we used to a ski magazine and then not see it until it shows up in print in November and December. So we're able to be pretty agile there. For the most part, I think the biggest change that you're going to see is that we'll be advertising to a much, I don't want to say local market, but a much more regional market. So we are lucky that we're, you know, a drive, the entire Western Seacoast can drive to Utah in a day. And, you know, in a world where we're seeing people drive much more than they're flying, you know, that'll probably be our focus. Our circle is just going to shrink a bit, you know, where before it encompassed New York and Boston and Florida, Texas and Chicago, and then California. You know, I think that'll probably, our focus will shrink just a little bit, but we need to make sure we stay flexible in case things come back and we are able to host people from outside, you know, at greater distances, and we'll get those people back in, because the, you know, New York is trades with Southern California with our top two markets. So, you know, those are very important markets to us.
Yeah. And I've got to imagine that even if you kept volume the same with the drive markets, the revenue numbers per visitor have got to be higher the farther people are coming from.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. So it's more than triple. If I'm just trying to think of those numbers, but I want to say that a destination skier is going to spend just higher than $350 a day, and a local skier on average spends something like $111 a day. And you know, that's for obvious reasons. The destination skier is paying for lodging. They're renting a car. They're often renting skis. They're ski school, and you know, they're spending money on all these different fronts, where a lot of the locals have their own equipment. They're not taking lessons, and we hope that they dine at their restaurants, but a lot of times they'll bring their own lunch too. So you know, they're equally important segments of our business, but you know, it's hard to have a really successful year if you cut that destination piece out.
Yeah, absolutely. It seems like for most businesses in the tourism industry, you know, this year was survival, right? Next year is maintenance and make sure that you can at least maintain your audience. And I think growth is something that people are looking at for 2022 at this point.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, what makes me rest a little bit easier is that, you know, our model, Utah's model, is not broken. We are firing on all cylinders, whether it's winter, summer, whatever. You know, this little hiccup came out of left field and doesn't mean our machine is broken. But when we finally get past the COVID issue, whether it means vaccine or however it moves on, it will eventually. And our machine is going to start cranking back up again. And we're going to start delivering the same great product that we, you know, did at the beginning of the ski season.
That's a great point. And in any crisis, there's always positives that you can pull from that. Are there specific opportunities or positives that you've seen in this crisis that maybe you didn't anticipate?
Yeah, a couple. You know, I was really heartened by how agile and optimistic our team has been at Ski Utah. So, you know, we're able to pivot and say, well, that, you know, that plan goes out the window, we'll make a new plan. You know, we've got a motivated, young, creative bunch that have been really good at flying by the seat of their pants. Not everybody's good at that. So I was proud of our team for doing that. And then, you know, one silver lining in this whole deal is, you know, we've got a incredible new airport coming online this September.
Right.
And they've even, because of the reduced passenger count, they've been able to move their timeline ahead, believe it or not, and even save several $100 million. So what was going to be a process that took, I don't know, 5 or 6 years beyond the initial phase opening in September has shrunk by several years, because, you know, they were needing to keep every gate open as they did the additional phases of the airport. And now with reduced passenger number, they're just going to knock everything down all at once, or the, you know, kind of phase two, and build that up. So we're going to see a quicker build of our airport. And I think that is going to be amazing asset for our industry.
I love that point because I think for so many destinations and organizations, in a time like this, when traffic is down, a focus on infrastructure and product in a lot of cases will allow you to come out ahead of where you even would have been if the crisis hadn't have happened.
Yeah, and you know, I think there'll also be processes that stay in place long after COVID is over, and I can't think of what they might be specifically, but you know, payment systems, reservation systems, things that, you know, these resorts are focused to invest or forced to invest in new technology that makes the experience even better. Some of these things that might just stick around beyond this coming ski season. So, you know, I think that'll be an advantage.
Yeah, I totally agree. Okay. Well, Nathan, this has been really insightful and helpful. I appreciate you coming on. Is there anything I haven't asked you that you think would benefit the destinations that listen to our show?
You know, I think we covered it pretty well. I'd encourage anybody who hasn't been to Utah to get out here and play. You know, we're just so fortunate during this crazy COVID time that, you know, I keep thinking how lucky and fortunate we all are that live here, that have this kind of great outdoors just steps away from us. And, you know, it makes a rough situation a little bit more tolerable, but I'd encourage anybody who hasn't visited the state of Utah to come out and give us a chance.
I second that wholeheartedly. We live in a pretty amazing state.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, thanks again, Nathan, for coming on. We appreciate your time. It was a lot of fun, and we're excited to see how everything shakes out this winter.
Yep, looking forward to a great winter. Thanks so much, Adam.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. This has been another episode of the Destination Marketing Podcast. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, please make sure you don't forget to leave us a rating or a review. That helps the show continue to grow. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. Okay, everybody, we've been talking about recovery for a while now, and my team at Relic has been working on recovery campaigns for several destinations over the last couple of months. They've actually developed a pretty amazing, we'll call it an algorithm, to know when it's safe to do acquisition marketing in a market. And so what I mean by that is you've got government regulations, you've got, you know, how is the virus affecting that market, whether there's been a decrease in cases or a decrease in deaths in that market. When is it safe to advertise, hey, come to our destination? Like I said, our team has come up with this algorithm to provide that information for you, and we're offering a free market report. We're calling it Recovery Triggers. And if you'd like a free recovery trigger report for your target market where you want to draw visitors from, please email me directly at adam@relicagency.com. Or you can go to recoverytriggers.relicagency.com and we'll get you set up with a free report. And we even have the ability to send you a weekly recurring report so you can see what's happening in that market on a weekly basis and make sure you're launching your acquisition campaign at the perfect time.